Hey, San Spaysan, it's Jorgen Sundberg here with the Employer Branding Podcast, brought to you by Link Humans, London's employer branding agency. This week, it's all about the secret source of success to employer brand and some surefire ways to ruin it, if you're so inclined. Let's start the show. Adam Glassman, how are you?
Fine, Jorgen. How are you?
Very good, thank you. Thanks for being on the show today. Now, tell our listeners who you are and what you do.
Sure. So my name is Adam Glassman, and I'm the Recruitment Strategies Manager here at Alorica, which, if you're not familiar with the brand, we're a global customer service BPO with over 100,000 employees in 16 countries around the world, so quite large. At my core, I'm a recruitment marketer, passionate crusader for the candidate experience, digital, social, content strategist, and all of that really in the name of trying to turn around our industry, which I think has struggled for quite a long time at this point.
Yeah, and thank you for saying Glassman as well, not Glassman. You're also a regular contributor to Undercover Recruiter, and really enjoy your content there. So that's why I really want to ask you, what is your definition of employer brand?
Sure. You know, for me, employer brand is essentially the human story behind the big faceless companies. Companies oftentimes sell products or they offer services of some kind, but ultimately behind that are people, right? And that's what makes our companies go. And to me, the employer brand is the story of those people. So why do they work there? What do they get out of it? When you put all of those personalities together, what kind of culture is formed? What's the culture like? The overall values of the company, what do people respond to? What do the executives and the owners of the company value? Kind of what their mission is. So for me, it's really the human story behind the company itself.
And why would you say employer brand is important, and why now?
Honestly, I think it's always been important, but I think there's been more emphasis placed on it now for a couple of reasons. I think talent acquisition has been struggling probably for the last couple of years in particular. It's always been difficult to find and hire the right individual, increasingly so over the years. But now the majority of our economies are improving. The unemployment rate is lower. And candidates have more choices than they ever have before. So they research and they ask around. And most candidates have decided that they're not going to take a job if the culture isn't good or it's not a good fit for them or there aren't strong brand elements in place there. You know, I saw a study not too long ago that showed 70% of people wouldn't take a job with a company that has a bad reputation, even if they're unemployed. So think about that for a second. You have no job, you may not be able to pay your bills, but you're willing to turn down an offer if you feel like people are telling you they're a bad company to work for. So I think there's an increased emphasis today on the branding because of a lot of those factors.
Wow. Okay. Now, I know you've got a secret sauce to building a brilliant employer brand. What might this recipe be? What's in the recipe?
I do have a secret sauce. I don't know if it's so secret or just my impression of it, but for me, at its core, a strong employer brand, again, tells the stories of those people behind the company. And generally, throughout history, good stories have some kind of a hook. They have something to keep us interested. And today, even more so, our attention span is so limited, it's so small that anything we can to attract some attention and keep somebody interested in watching a video or reading some content is all the more important. So for me, the secret sauce really comes down to three things. And the first one is finding and collecting the stories of your people. So who are they? What do they do? What makes that story interesting to somebody who's never met that person? And again, probably has a very short attention span. So it can't just be, you know, this is John Smith and he's from London and he's 33. Well, that's not really interesting. You need to dig a little bit deeper behind the story. And in doing so, the second piece is what I like to call sharing the why. And when you're telling those stories, the why is really one of the most critical elements of that story. So why do the employees do their job? What motivates them to do it for this company? What compels them to get up every day early in the morning and maybe fight through traffic and trudge to work? There's a reason, right? And it can't just be a paycheck. You could get a paycheck anywhere. Certainly your pay scale could go up or down. So maybe benefits is part of that story, but generally there's a reason, there's a why behind why your employees do what they do, and that should really be one of your hooks. And then the third thing, number three, is that the best stories have some kind of an emotional pull to it. It tugs on your heartstrings a little bit. It has something you can connect with, you can emphasize with. And it really makes you feel a certain way. And so each company has to kind of decide what is that feeling that they want their audience to have. And it's really important to tie your stories to that feeling.
Okay, so let me put you on the spot, Adam. If we apply this to Alorica, mm-hmm. what are some of the good stories and what is the why? What makes people sit in traffic and to drive into the HQ every morning?
Yeah.
And what's the emotional pull of Alorica?
Yeah, you know, for us, there are a couple of different factors there. First and foremost, we are a very diverse group of employees, and we welcome that because a lot of our employees are call center agents and they're on the phone all day. Mm-hmm. You can bring your purple hair or your tattoos all over your face or your earrings or your cutoff shorts, and it really doesn't matter to us as long as you're providing great customer service to your phone calls and your social interactions and any interactions you have with your candidates, your customers, and you're making lives better every interaction that you can. That's important to us. The other piece for us is we have absolute real career growth opportunities here. So we oftentimes hire individuals right out of high school, maybe a couple of months of customer service experience, and within a couple of years, they could easily advance within the organization. We've had individuals come in and within a couple of months even of taking a job, they already become a team leader and they're managing others. And then there's growth from there. We have site directors who run the entire operations of some of our call centers who actually started on the phones. And so we have real examples of that within our organization, and we take pride in that and really providing some career growth for a lot of our employees as much as we can.
Awesome. I'll send my resume after this recording.
Let's do it.
Okay. And I know you've also listed a few ways to make sure that you ruin your employer brand. So basically the opposite of building a brilliant one. What are these?
Yeah. You know, I think there are a lot of things that companies can certainly do to hurt themselves here. And I actually wrote a piece on this for the Undercover Recruiter not too long ago, but a couple of things. When I think about some of the things that I see, probably the most common mistake is that companies still think that they can control their brand. And some of them, even in this day and age, don't want to get on social media for fear of negative criticism. Like somehow that stops a bad review from happening, right? Simply because they don't have a Facebook page. They don't let their employees have the freedom, like responsible adults, to talk about the company, to share information about the company. And they live in this reactive mode, like they're living in a turtle shell, petrified of coming out. So I think that's probably first and foremost, they're afraid of getting out into the marketplace and sharing positive stories for fear that it could turn negative. I think the second thing is probably not understanding how to properly leverage your brand and share some of the EVP that you've probably put a lot of work into. And there are a multitude of different ways to do that. But for me, if you have developed a solid EVP that truly reflects your company and your employees, you want to infuse that into everything that you do. So all of your external communications, your website, your ads, your social media, any interactions that your recruiters have with candidates, it should really reinforce that message over and over again. Another point that I see where companies struggle is they try to be something that they're not. Being authentic and being real to me trumps almost everything else. And I see that a lot, especially lately, where there's this increased push on trying to attract millennials, and how do we hire millennials, and how do we employ millennials, and companies are trying to jump on that bandwagon. And you know what? It's okay if your brand isn't for everyone. We obviously have to adjust to a changing demographic or changing generations. But if you are a very conservative bank, don't go out into the marketplace and talk about how your employees play ping pong every day and, you know, and we provide M&Ms for lunch or whatever it is that you think you're doing, if that's not true to who you are. Because it, at the end of the day, your EVP should be matching who you want to hire, because it doesn't do anybody any good to attract people who are not the right fit for the job. And then lastly, I always think it's a good idea if you can somehow connect your employer brand to your consumer brand. Mm. So again, kind of telling those stories of why most people, particularly for retail organizations, most individuals know the consumer brand much more so than the employer brand. So they know what products you sell, or maybe they have an affinity towards your brand because they like that product or they've walked into your store. Being able to tell the story of the people who make those products or who sell those services, and really sharing some of that story and connecting to what people already know from a consumer perspective is always a good idea. And I see that mistake a lot, and that's a missed opportunity for a number of organizations.
What about in your case, in Alorica, would anybody know the brand?
Well, so our case is a little bit different because we don't sell to the general public, since we're a BPO. We are an outsourced customer service call center organization. So we essentially have two audiences. We have clients, large organizations who want us to help them with their customer service interactions. And our second audience are our candidates, our job seekers, people who are looking for employment. So in truth, we have one brand. We don't necessarily have a consumer brand because we're not selling products or services direct to a marketplace.
Right.
And our brand is our brand. We have some subtle shifts as we think through the employer side of it. Like I mentioned, some of the career growth aspects. Obviously, that's not relevant to, you know, the CEO of a Fortune 100 company. But ultimately, those organizations who do business with us do want to know how we are treating our employees, and they want to know that we're treating them well and we're providing a growth path for them. So the two do connect in our world still.
Yeah. Okay. And what's the what are some of the best ways to measure employer brand ROI?
You know, I think this one's always tricky. Yep. For me, there are a number of variables. And sometimes it's hard to separate the brand's influence, the employer brand's influence, and some other factors. Like if you're increasing your advertising spend, how do you allocate what is happening from advertising versus your employer brand? So I think there are some variables there that you'd have to separate. But for me, from an ROI perspective, it really all depends on what your goals are and where you are as a company in that employer journey. So what is your maturity with your employer brand? So for instance, some companies are just starting out and perhaps they're somewhat unknown in their space, then their goal should probably revolve more around brand awareness and getting more people interested in their opportunities. So some of the ROI for that would be, how many people are seeing your ads or connecting to your social pages? Are you getting an increased number of visitors on your careers website? And ultimately, are you increasing the number of applications you're getting? So from an awareness perspective, you could look at ROI in those metrics. Some individuals, some companies might be trying to attract a certain niche or a certain segment of their audience, and their goals might be different. The numbers don't necessarily matter as much, and maybe it's more about quality. And, you know, it's interesting when we think about quality. Ultimately, I think the employer brand efforts should in some way track back to a quality of hire. Because like I said, if you've crafted your brand in the right way, you're trying to attract a specific job seeker. Do those people perform well in the job once they're hired? Do they stay longer? If not, you may be attracting perhaps the wrong audience. So the measure of quality is also something to consider too.
Great. And then there's a search and employer review site that gets a lot of airtime on this podcast. And I just want to know, what's Glassman's take on Glassdoor?
What's my take? Glassdoor has its place. I think sometimes we get a little bit too caught up in it, to be honest. In general, we know most people who leave reviews, particularly on Glassdoor, tend to be upset about something. So I think it's kind of a magnet for some criticism. And look, I think you see that in customer service all the time, right? How many times have you called a customer service rep just to say, thanks, I had a great experience in your store, right? It doesn't happen. So I think Glassdoor is naturally a bit negative, but it doesn't mean it's wrong. And so from my perspective, I think there are a couple of opportunities to leverage Glassdoor from an employer perspective. The first is I always recommend using Glassdoor as a listening post. So if you are listening to what people are writing, there's probably some truth behind it. And again, they may have some negative perceptions, or perhaps they weren't hired and they're a little frustrated, whatever the case may be. There's probably some truth to what they're writing. So if you as a company are listening to that and you're taking it to heart, they're telling you exactly what to fix about your brand. They're telling you exactly what to improve upon and to take action where you can correct some of those critiques. And then from there, it's always a good idea to respond where you can and engage with some of those reviews and say, hey, look, I hear what you're saying, and here are some of the steps we've put in place to improve over the last 12 months. And here are the things we've done, 1, 2, 3. And so you help shift that potentially negative comment into a positive. My personal take is I wish Glassdoor, frankly, would lower their prices a little bit, because I think more companies would use it and buy into some of their enhanced profiles if it weren't so expensive. But I certainly have no say in that.
Yeah. I'm just looking at Alorica's rating on Glassdoor now. Do you know what the score is?
I do.
Any comments on it? It's 2.3 out of 5.
It is. And again, that's one of those things where it's lower than what we would like it to be. Part of that is based in our industry. What our customer service agents go through is difficult. A lot of times they're answering some angry phone calls. They're taking some critiques. They're perhaps getting yelled at. And there's some high turnover within the industry itself simply because of that.
Yeah.
But we actually pride ourselves in doing our own research internally. And so we listen to our employees, all of our employees, not just the ones who take the time to go to Glassdoor, but we do regular surveys internally where we listen to all of our employees and we give them a chance to voice their opinions. And again, we listen to that and we know we're not perfect. And so we take those opportunities to learn from what our employees are saying and learn from what they're suggesting we do better and take that to heart, and where we can really put some real improvements in place.
Yep. Great. Okay. So looking at companies doing it right, who would you recommend our listeners check out?
Companies doing it right. I think, and maybe I'm just cynical, but I think we tend to have moments of doing it right.
Yeah.
But like I mentioned, we don't control the brand anymore, right? So one slip up or one argument your employee gets in, or one bad experience, and all of a sudden we're quote unquote a bad company, and it's posted on YouTube for millions of people to see. I think of some of the experience that Uber and United Airlines has gone through recently. Did anybody think they had such terrible brands a year and a half ago? Probably not. But your question was who's doing a good job today? So I may be a little bit US centric, but I have a couple of brands that I see out there who are telling some good stories. The Home Depot tends to tell some good stories about their associates and their employees, as does Thermo Fisher, who has been written a lot about lately, particularly in the U.S. There's a lot of good stories that they're pulling out. And that's a company, that's an example of a company that's really pulling out the why, right? Their employees are working there for a reason. These are very smart people who are innovating research and working on diseases and cures for diseases and things like that. So there's a lot of real stories and real emotional pull there. Who else? I see Taco Bell is actually pretty innovative in their career space. Usually on social media, they're usually some of the first people to one of the first brands to hop on like Snapchat and try some different things like that. I like Target too, which is interesting because I think for me, it's in the US in particular, a lot of brands have started to become more vocal publicly about where they stand with some of their core values, particularly when political issues arise or social issues are coming up publicly. A lot of brands, interestingly enough, in the last couple of years have started to really take a stand where in years past, you couldn't get a brand to comment on it for fear of losing business or getting criticized. Now brands are saying, hey, look, this is where we stand. This is who we are. We will fight for those values and we will fight for what we believe in. And I think Target's one of those brands. So I do value that.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I mean, recently this Paris Climate Accord, lots of big tech companies and other entities have come out in favor of it, even though the U.S. is withdrawing, which you probably wouldn't have seen 10 years ago.
No, you wouldn't have. And you know, a lot of CEOs are publicly criticizing President Trump over this and coming out against it and saying, you know, we would still support this. And Elon Musk of Tesla was on an advisory committee for the White House and basically said, I'm not going to advise the president anymore because of this. He's not listening to our recommendations. So why am I wasting my time? And he publicly came out and criticized some political issues. And so it's interesting to see how companies are more comfortable in that today. And they're really taking a stand on some values that they find important.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so if we look ahead, what's the next big thing for employer brand in your opinion?
The next big thing, well, I think there's a ton of room for us to improve what we're doing today. So, you know, like I said, telling better stories and understanding who our employees and our candidates are is probably a great place to start. But if we're looking ahead, I actually see a world where our EVPs may start to become a little bit more personalized. And so when we think about our values, our brand's values and certain cultural components, those may be standards, but as we get a better understanding of who our candidates are and personalizing some of that experience, we may be able to personalize the EVP a little bit too, right? So why can't we provide relevant components of that EVP if, for instance, we know that a candidate likes, Habitat for Humanity and building for the communities. Why can't we personalize some of that EVP and talk about our community work a little bit heavier in our content messaging and our content marketing to that candidate because we understand who they are and what they value? So I think probably in the coming years, as we get more data and we start working artificial intelligence into more of what we're doing in talent acquisition, I see a little bit more of a drilled down EVP that could be more relevant to each of our candidates.
Interesting. Great. Right. Final question. Where can people connect with yourself, Adam? And where can they learn more about your work?
Yeah, sure. So two main places. You can connect with me on Twitter at aglass99 and on LinkedIn. You can search by Adam Glassman. And particularly in the U.S., there is another Adam Glassman who is a creative director for Oprah. That is not me. So if you find anything related to Oprah, that's not me. But I'm also honored to be a guest speaker at Smashfly's Transform Conference later this month, which is June 22nd. So check that out as well. And there's lots of different ways to connect with me, and I look forward to doing that.
Great. Adam Glassman, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Jorgen. I hope you have a good afternoon.
All right. I hope that was useful. Everything Adam and I discussed will, of course, be in the show notes article, which you'll be able to find on Undercover Recruiter and employerbrandingpodcast.com. Now, in other news, have we got any champagne lovers out there? I thought so. I'm not talking the Californian or the Russian stuff. I'm talking the real deal, the overpriced French bottles of bubbly. How about getting a sparkling bottle sent straight to your desk? Sounds good, huh? All I'd like to ask is that you give an honest review of this podcast in iTunes or the podcast app on iOS, and you'll automatically be in the draw. Very simple, and many thanks in advance for leaving a review. It means a lot to me. Now, if you want to learn more about Linkhumans or have any questions around employer brand, feel free to email me at jorgen@linkhumans.com. And that's it for this week. Many thanks for tuning in, and catch you next time. Hey, dog.
Don't settle for what you've always done in the past simply because you've always done it. It doesn't make it right.